This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to the Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, in celebration of the theatrical release of Swinging Safari and in the first of a series of episodes spotlighting modern Australian queer content, we are celebrating the iconic, camp and truly Australian filmography of Stephen Elliott.
You actually make money by dressing up like a woman.
Oh, sure. I can make a fine living in a pair of heels.
And of course, Gina, that is the unmistakable sound of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which is probably the best known film by Stephen Elliott and certainly introduced his unique brand of camp, queer, Australian.
I think you could have said it a particular way. Yes.
Well, it introduced him to us, didn't it?
It did. And I think, you know, like some musos out there that have a best, you know, number one song, and when they go on concert, they want to play the new hits and everyone wants to hear that classic. We're always going to remember, we're at the moment, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, like Crocodile Dundee, hate to quote it, is one of our most successful Australian films.
And one of the most iconic Australian films. And it just so happens to be queer.
Yeah, fabulous.
And to resonate so deeply in the psyche of Australian queer culture. It's a really important film.
I remember when I was talking to you before this, and again, we kind of joke about our ages, but I actually said to you, Daniel, how old were you when this came out and you saw it? And then you told me how old you were when it came out, and I was like, okay, you clearly weren't at the cinema for that. Whereas I was in the cinema watching this as a teenager amongst my teenage peers and judging whether my, you know, teenage high school friends were going to be okay with me being gay, watching their reactions to this film. And thankfully, they laughed. They really enjoyed the film, which made me feel a lot safer. Like that film has so much meaning to my history. And it's something that, yeah, it's just, everyone knows it's a musical now. It's Broadway. It's gone to Korea. It's gone everywhere.
And with Priscilla as the franchise that it now is, it is kind of hard to appreciate that this film came out nearly 25 years ago and went into production even before that. And at that time, in 1994, it was a different world. Yeah. And the kind of world that Priscilla showed us was a world that we rarely saw on the screen.
And I think it was one of those films, I mean, you know, it was still the early 90s, so this film would have been in production in, you know, the writing of it, I assume, in the late 80s, early 90s. We're coming off the back of one of the most horrific periods in, you know, in queer history with the AIDS crisis and everything that the community went through from that. This film would have been a relief, a breath of fresh air for us to laugh, to laugh at ourselves and to see our community in a very different way.
And to have a queer comedy where the queers aren't the butt of the joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Was a really almost unprecedented thing, especially in Australia.
Look, I highly recommend, especially if people are still new to queer, like Daniel, did not grow up with Priscilla, Queen of the Desert in their teens or 20s. There's actually a really good, it's an old ABC documentary. And in fact, Free to Wear was playing it yesterday, called Between the Rock and a Hard Place, which not only looks at the making of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, in fact, Terrence Stamp narrates this documentary, but what it also does is it shows us archival footage of interviews with community leaders about the history that led to an Australia of that time and our history at this time. And it's a really important documentary to really get a sense of where we were as people and in a place when this film kind of hit the ground. So I highly recommend, look, if you want to know more and remember what world we were living in when this film came out, because it was a big deal, and it was a big deal to make this film. Mm. They were getting rejected for funding. They were told it was homophobic, it was racist. They were not getting a hand. This was not something they'd be pulling out now and ticking all the diversity ticks. This would have been a very hard film to make. So I highly recommend, if you get a chance to see, it's an old ABC doco between a frock, and a hard place.
There you go.
The making of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
And what better way, I think, to spotlight this film, and indeed the iconically Australian and camp, and I must say quite queer filmography of Stephen Elliott, than to actually speak with the man himself. So that's what we're going to be doing this evening. We're going to be having an exclusive chat with Stephen Elliott, the director of Priscilla, and indeed the director of the new film Swinging Safari, which stars Guy Pearce, Kylie Minogue, Radha Mitchell. It's all-star Australian
amazing cast.
And is in many ways a love letter to a world of political incorrectness.
There's a lot of incorrectness. You can just watch the preview to Swinging Safari. There's a lot of political incorrectness. I can't wait to see how a global audience is going to take this film.
Well, should we have a listen to the trailer then?
Please, Daniel, play.
This is Swinging Safari. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
There comes a time in every man's life. Bugger it. Just take them. You know how to put them on, right? So I could take you to the bathroom. I could show you.
What the hell happened in the 1970s? Let's go back and meet three rudderless families. The Joneses with the big kahunas on the block.
Somebody's going to get hurt and it's not going to be me.
The Hall House was a disaster movie in the making.
Welcome to the club, men. It's the way.
My family was stuck right in the middle of the cul-de-sac.
Dad!
Oh, g'day, Mr. Marsh.
I was armed with a Super 8 camera.
Oh, what you got there, love? Look at that!
No cameras tonight?
I captured everything.
Oh, I think I'm gonna hurl.
In the hope I could edit together...
The next game's called Swinging Safari.
Oh, I'm here.
What was going through our poor, misguided heads?
Why were they doing that to each other?
I don't know. We just go to school like normal.
Surprise! The pill, sweetheart. Your father and I think it's time.
Thank you!
And what are we playing?
Poker. Everybody else has.
Cork and bush pig.
Shut up, hussy.
Alcoholic bottle blonde.
Cock tease.
Our parents did the best they could with the bent tools they were handed.
Looks like you might have found yourself a plot, Tiger.
We're all going to Catholic boarding schools. The priests will have their way with you.
Well, that was the trailer for Swinging Safari, the new film from Stephen Elliott, the director who brought us a slew of remarkable Australian films, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, A Welcome to Whoop Whoop, which is perhaps remarkable for some of the wrong reasons.
Surprised you're old enough to remember that one, Daniel.
Oh, please. Remarkable Alan's and important filmography, because what Stephen does is he lifts a mirror up to society and shows us who we are and who we have been, and he does that with this film. Swinging Safari is a colourful satire of a typical Australian beachside neighbourhood in the height of the 1970s summer, and it really is just that. It's a bricolage of memories that are kind of weaved together to tell a story that is really more nostalgia than it is anything else, I think.
I think it's all obscene nostalgia of the 1970s.
It's political incorrectness. This is political incorrectness on steroids.
You heard that last line in that preview talking about priests and Catholic boarding schools.
He doesn't shy away from that. No, he owns it.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. This film is out there, and this is where I'm curious, where an international audience, will they understand words like kahuna, bush pig, hurl, cocktails, those kind of, that's language that is just so unique to the Australian sort of psyche. But also, ice cream containers on your heads to protect yourself from magpies. Will people... see this.
You did that as a kid, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Totally.
Like, was that? I'm surprised that that was a thing.
To, like, work so those
this, you see,
arms.
This film is an education. That's what this film is. I think this is a really great way to kick off a series of episodes that we're going to do spotlighting modern queer Australian cinema. Next week we'll be airing an interview with Warwick Thornton, who's the director of Sweet Country, a film that's also opening up in coming weeks.
And people might know Warwick from Samson and Delilah.
A really important voice in Australian filmmaking. We'll also be airing next week as part of this look at modern Australian cinema. Segments of a seminar that was held over the weekend.
A very important seminar. Don't play this down. I'm not going to let you. So over the weekend, because Daniel's going to play it down, Daniel facilitated a very impressive guest list
at the Better Together
the conference. Well, it was, because I was following Twitter and watching all the commentary coming through, and it was all remarkable. Positive, so well done. And you had a roundtable discussion with Anna Kokonos, Caroline Pitcher from Film Victoria, Cerise Howard, Graeme Mason from Screen Australia, Ross Murray Glad. Stuart Richards, who we've had here before.
So what the panel did, it drew together experts from different corners of the Australian film industry. Cerise curates a number of film festivals, including she was a co-founding member of Tilda.
Yep.
Stuart Richards we've had on the program before. GLAAD was a really important voice to have there as well. Obviously Screen Australia and Film Victoria, and Anna Kokinos, one of the most remarkable Australian directors in the country. It drew together these voices to have a chat about the status of queer representation in Australian cinema and what we can do to improve queer representation in Australian cinema. So I think we will be airing snippets from that conversation next week, and I think it furnishes a really interesting and important counterpart to some of the chats we're having with iconic Australian directors over the next few weeks, including tonight's chat with Stephen Elliott. So I think it's going to be a good few weeks.
Yeah, and a
fitting way to kick it off with Stephen Elliott. So our chat with the director of Priscilla, and indeed the new film Swinging Safari, coming up right after this. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, in the first of a series of episodes spotlighting modern Australian content, we are celebrating the iconic camp, queer and truly Australian filmography of Stephen Elliott.
We'd like to hear from our listeners though, Daniel.
We would.
Yeah, and we
always.
Can. Always. And we want to know, really, if you were growing up in the 70s and, Swinging Safari is the name of this, and I kind of look at it.
It was going to be, did you know it was going to be called something else?
Well,
Flammable Children or something like that?
I have a feeling this is part of Stephen's history. So if you were to make...
Political incorrectness.
Yeah, possibly.
Something like that.
If you were to make a film about your childhood in the 70s, and clearly I'm talking to people my age and older... What would you title that film?
So, and if you weren't around in the 70s, like some of us, tell us, if you've got, if you think there's a voice out there, a fresh Australian filmmaking voice that you'd like to see us spotlight, if you think there's a particular film that you'd like to see us cover when we look at modern Australian queer cinema, message in and let us know that as well.
Message in on 0427JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. And I really would like to know what your 70s, film would be called.
Well, what would yours be called?
Oh,
the ice cream
burning
tub
houses. That's what I was doing.
What?
Yeah, I burnt our house when I was 3 years.
Burning down houses.
Burning down houses.
It sounds like
call for authorities.
Like
bit of a horror film, suspense, thriller. They found me in the end.
Well, message in and let us know. 0427JOY949 is the number, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. And we are speaking with Stephen Elliott this evening, the director of Swinging Safari, and indeed a host of really important and iconic, what we might call queer and camp Australian films. And indeed, we are calling them queer and camp. But look, I sat down with Stephen Elliott and had a chat about the film, and you know, I knew when I was speaking to him that he was taking us back to a really personal time in his own life when he was growing up in the 70s in Australia in the kind of suburban sprawl.
With a Super 8 camera in his hand?
This is him. Perhaps. This is him, you know. He takes us back to his childhood, and it's a brave thing to do. It is a brave thing to do, absolutely, especially when you kind of couch it in the kind of farce that this film is. I mean, this is a farce.
Where parents are having key parties and, getting up to
mischief. I asked Stefan why he took us back to this time in Australia's history.
Well, you know, what's the film about? The film is ultimately, it's about the moments that defined me. It's quite personal. And I do. Why the 70s? Well, let me tell you. The 60s was a pretty astonishing period. It was, you know, the sexual revolution was underway. The wars, there were still wars raging right around the world at that point. You know, stuff was going down. And then cut to the 80s, which was the information explosion, the beginning of the internet, and the beginning of cheap airfares. And Australia ceased to become an island at that point. So you look at this incredibly fast-moving 80s and this incredibly turbulent 60s. What the hell happened in the 1970s? And I open the film with that line. Not a lot. A lot of very, very confused people trying to make sense of what they should be doing and know that they had all this freedom, but they really didn't know what to do with it. There was a period of absolutely no rules before the rules were invented. It was the, you know, it's the time before political correctness. There weren't even politics to be incorrect about. And that was what I grew up in. There technically were no rules. The film's fun, but there's some pretty dark stuff in the film too.
It is a fun film, and it is a dark film, and it is in some ways a politically incorrect film as well. Does that make you nervous?
It's just been so fascinating recently to watch a US president get into power, proud of groping women, you know, proud of just, you know, and that wave of political incorrectness kind of got him into power. There was a voice there saying, yeah, he's saying what we all think. Yeah, let him go. And watch what's happened in that year of this appalling president who admits to being a bigot and a racist and a homophobe, completely admits it and makes no... And people got... They liked it. They liked somebody could say that. It all ended in two words. Harvey Weinstein. And everything that Trump thought he'd achieved, Harvey Weinstein undid in a week. And the backlash of where we've been from literally a few months ago to where we are now, we're in a completely new climate. That's astonishing to me of how quickly that's flipped.
But it is interesting as well because we've been through the political ringer here in Australia last year as well.
You have.
And political correctness was on the agenda throughout the marriage equality debate as well. People like Tony Abbott, for instance, arguing that we need to do away with political correctness. And so it is then interesting to have this film which revisits the idea of political correctness in many ways.
Well, the film deals with political incorrectness.
Well, yes.
So it's, the timing is kind of astonishing when I look at to what I've done, which is very proudly. I mean, there's some stuff in the film which is appalling, but yeah. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the fact that I got brought up sometimes in the most appalling circumstances. No one really meant what they were doing. They just didn't know better. And I've got a scene in the film which I've already gotten into trouble for, which is the men, which is Jeremy Sims and Julie McMahon. Saying that they have to sort their women out. That is just hilarious. I think it's hilarious, but already I can hear there's a ripple coming off that. When I said, yeah, but that's what it was.
Right.
There was a generation of men who did think like that.
But do you think, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. What you're doing here is you're holding a mirror up to particularly Australian society and showing us this is how we were. But I think there's an element of you showing us how we actually are still. And I think maybe that's why people are getting anxious.
Of course it is. At the end of the day, we are showing stuff that people really don't want to talk about or know about. My favourite films that I've made go in, you know, in no particular order is this one, Swingy Safari, Welcome to Whoop Whoop, and Priscilla, because I did the same trick. All three films, I'm holding a mirror up, and in the case of Welcome to Whoop Whoop, they really didn't like it. They didn't like it at all. I was...
But why don't people like it?
Well, I just showed them exactly what I was actually holding a mirror up.
Yeah.
Particularly, Whoop-Whoop was a metaphor for Australia.
Yeah.
Which was... And the town was run by, you know, racist, bigoted, homophobic pigs.
Yeah.
living in the outback. I mean, it was a little metaphor for what Australia was. And at that point in time in the late 90s, the Coffee Society had just come in. You know, Australians were ready to move on, and I dragged them right back again. And right. Nothing prepared me for that hiding I got out of that film. I was completely annihilated.
But all I did,
very much. Now, no, I was wounded at the time. It really, really hurt. But, you know, nothing was more fabulous than having Margaret Pomeranz in Cannes. Like, she wasn't kind. And not long ago on Fox, she represented the movie and she watched it again and she apologized. She said, it's taken me 20 years to get the joke. I didn't realize what he was doing.
Yeah.
And she said that on air.
Fantastic.
And she said, this far down the line, I have to apologize because I now see it. So we could be in the same boat. But, I didn't back off. There was no point in backing off. Movie making is compromise. Let me tell you, the joy of making a film is, let me tell you, the best moment. You've got an empty page in front of you. It's you at your computer. You're entirely on your own. And that first draft is your dream. And you go places that where your mind wants to go. You go to incredibly weird places. You can just dream. And the second you hand that first draft over, the compromising begins.
Yeah.
You want to know what filmmaking is? It's the art of compromise.
Keena, you're the resident filmmaker. The art of compromise.
We would call it collaborating to keep everyone in the room
this
happy.
This is you political correctness.
Totally.
And this is why Stefan is an important voice because he is the antithesis of political correctness.
Look, I think you have to have some really good swings at the board in order to be able to do that as well as he does. Mm. Nobody will let you make a film of that scale if you don't have swings on the board. And Al Clark, again, is the producer from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, coming up and making this film. I loved that Margaret Pomeranz, who was actually in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert in one of those scenes, apologised for the review of Welcome to Whoop Whoop 20 years later. I finally got the joke. Love it. That.
Well, like, you burst out laughing.
Well, that's the thing. I think, you know what, when we did watch Whoop Whoop when it came out, I think, again, you know, he's going to have this shadow of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert because it was such an important film that kind of was dropped into our psyche and into this world at a point in time that we can't replicate it. We needed that film at that time. Mm. That it kind of cast a shadow over his other work, and everyone expected everything to be like that. But what he was doing was what he said, casting a mirror up to everything that embarrasses us and makes us a bit uncool and unfashionable. And yeah,
I do really like that he owns his political incorrectness, though. I think that's really important. And to be frank, there were quite a few times during this film, Swinging Safari, where I felt uncomfortable.
Oh, my God, the 70s were completely inappropriate.
Cover your ears here. That's a warning. But the word faggot was used over and over again in this film, unnecessarily, I thought, and it made me feel uncomfortable. But when you talk about holding a mirror up to society, I guess that's the way we need to feel.
And you know what? I'm guilty of watching the Midwives show at the moment, and every character in that film is pregnant and smoking with a newborn in their hands. What we're doing is showing what was happening at that time. If he was to censor that language,
it wouldn't work.
And okay, it is going to upset some people because it was upsetting at the time, but that was how people spoke. That's how everyone talked to each other.
We are chatting with Stefan Elliott, the director of Swinging Safari, and indeed a number of really iconic and important Australian films. More with Stefan coming up on Outtakes right after this.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, in celebration of the theatrical release of Swinging Safari, the new film from Stefan Elliott, and as the first of a series of episodes that we're airing on Outtakes, spotlighting modern Australian content that is queer and revels in its queerness, we are spotlighting the iconic camp and truly Australian filmography of Stefan Elliott.
And I loved what he was talking about, that kind of freeness. His favourite part of the filmmaking process is the actual inception of it, is the moment he sits in front of a page and starts to write. And, you know, most of us would call that vomit draft, where you allow yourself to go and do anything without any budget or any...
draft,
yeah, well exactly. Yeah, if we're looking at the language of the 70s, hurling would be the way to go. But it is such a beautiful beautiful time because there are no restrictions. Mm. There are no collaboration or what was the word he used?
Compromise.
Compromise at that point. It is just letting a story come to life, and it is actually one of the most beautiful moments of filmmaking. So I loved hearing him say
that. We are speaking with Stefan about the filmmaking process.
My big trick is, and this has got taught to me many years ago, is always leave rubbish in your first cut. Just make sure you put absolute nonsense in there and help direct particularly Americans towards the rubbish and say, what do you think about that scene? They go, I don't like it. I want to cut it. You say, we should cut it out. And they go, you think so? And I said, you're absolutely right. We should cut that out. And they go, and then they feel empowered and then they're on deck and they think, I made a difference today. I in there and I cut this scene. Well, they were herded towards it and told to cut it out. The problem you got with that one is you got some studio exec who then likes a piece of rubbish and says, no, I really like it. Then you got trouble.
And then you just wait till you're in the cutting room and then.
Oh no, they put their foot down.
And so manipulation and compromise doesn't always work.
No, it can
be more compromise than manipulation.
Completely bite you in the ass. I've got two or three moments in two or three films which were totally, I got caught with my pants down and thought, oh, now I'm done.
So can you share one moment? What's one moment where manipulation and compromise didn't quite work?
My favourite one is in Welcome to Whoop Whoop, where I've got Rod Taylor. He told you what the film was. In a single track, into his face, it pushed out. He said, it's too bloody high, it's too bloody dry, it's too bloody hot. It's ours. It's Australia. And I think that's something worth fighting for. Hands up there in the crowd who think this is worth a fight. Now, that's the softened version because it was full of swearing. Sam Goldwyn Jr., and that's a gold one. You know, Sam's father, you know, ran Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Sam hooked into the scene and he said, I don't quite understand what he's talking about. And I said, well, Whoop Whoop is a metaphor for Australia. And he said, but he's talking about Whoop Whoop, the town. I said, what's Australia got to do with that? And it was kind of the point of the film.
Yeah.
And I then danced and threw things at him and we got up to the very end of the cut and he spun around and said, he's still talking about Australia. I don't understand what he's talking about Australia. And then Sam said, no, I'm going to cut that whole scene. I said, Sam, if you cut that scene, you're cutting the whole point of the film. I don't think people are going to get that Whoop Whoop is this little metaphor. And he said, cut it. And in the end, I said, okay, I'm going to lose the point of the film here. So I said, what can I do? And he said, if you say, make him say, it's Whoop Whoop, and I think that's worth fighting for rather than Australia, you can keep the scene. Otherwise, I cut it. So when you look at the finished product at the end on that track into Rod Taylor's face as he gets up to the word Australia, my lips come in as a bad special effects and say the word Whoop Whoop. And I did that to save the scene. But when I lost the word Australia from that scene, I think people lost what the point of the film was. And I think that single moment by a Hollywood executive putting his foot down cost that film its point.
Oh, gee, you know, why I love that anecdote is because you've been doing the same thing throughout your filmic career, or the majority of it. You've been holding a mirror up to us and you've been telling us who we are and where we come from. And it's such a unique perspective to bring to the screen. And the other interesting thing about that anecdote is it shows that doesn't always translate with American audiences or audiences. Like, we have a very, very unique brand of humor here.
Oh, completely.
And I mean, but that must make you anxious. Coming back to something like Swinging Safari, when you make Swinging Safari, surely you're worried about how other international audiences are going to receive this film.
For the first time in my life, I actually don't care because it's so personal, because so much of it happened once I handed the script in and it began. It began immediately. Well, if you want to get the American buyers in, and the compromising started. And just, I thought, for once in my life, I'm not going to budge. And I didn't budge. And I said, I've got to roll a crap on this one. Craps are going to roll. I just don't know how it is. I've got to be really pure. And we were really pure. And by the time the actors came, cast as well, then crew and everyone started bringing stuff to the table. It was completely organic. It was completely real. And I said, I, for the once in my life, are going to go with my gut and stand up to them. And if they don't like it, well, go and see another movie. That's all I can say. You know, there's people out there going to say, I hate this movie. Well, they hate me. I got to take that. I know I'm going to cop that in a minute. People are going to say,
and are you prepared? I mean, I guess when you make a film, you do open yourself up.
Completely.
But this is very personal.
This is very personal. And it's going to hurt.
Well, hopefully
it's going to hurt. No, it's going to hurt. There's one or two people out there are going to go for my throat, and this time I know they've gone for me before, and I'm used to it. But this time, it's
well, really I have to say, I don't recall ever seeing a film quite like this. And I think you're bringing us a really unique perspective that I think is a really important Australian voice. And I don't think we see that mirror held up to us enough. So I,
thank you.
No, I mean it. I can see why you would be proud of this work. It is a personal work, but it is something that I think we can all share in. You know, obviously I wasn't around in the 70s.
No.
Although one thing that did strike me about it was that this is a very heterosexual white community on the screen. But
I grew up in that.
Yeah, right.
A kid growing up in that environment.
So did I.
Yeah, so did you. We all did. There's a moment wondering where you fit in. If you look at the central
arc. I think the film deals with that as well.
Very much. It's a 14-year-old kid, which is me, wandering around with a Super 8 camera, trying to figure out what the hell was going on and why don't I fit in and why am I an outsider? I mean, it's all there.
Yeah.
And it is. And we had a great moment with Extras Casting, and my partner, 25 years this year, ended up doing Extras Casting for me because I ran out of money, and I said, and he didn't want to do it. And I said, you have to do this for me because we're just out of money.
Yeah.
So he ended up doing about 15 jobs, but he got in charge of doing Extras Casting, and, you know, he said, what are you after? I said, I've got to be really, really nasty here. I've just got to be really honest. I want blonde-haired, blue-eyed people.
Well, that's what you grew up with.
That's what I grew up in. And seriously, those big Extras days when we got down there, it was 250 blonde-haired, blue-eyed people. it was so spooky. It actually was really freaking a bunch of people out.
Today it's freaky and contrived, but back then, it's how it was.
Back then, basically the only foreign people we knew was the guy who owned the Chinese restaurant and the Greek grocer. There were two people, and we were quite proud of ourselves that we were talking to the Chinaman. And that's how it was. I can't change that world.
No,
it's completely different.
And instead
now.
Of changing it, you take us back to it. And that's really important.
Yeah.
That is really important.
Was it racism to do that, though? Can you call that racism? Because you've got one Chinese person in the film and one Greek person
was
in the film.
Was it racist filmmaking? Is that what you're asking me?
I'm going to get accused for being racist.
Stephen Elliott there talking about the
controversial
film. Yeah, the process of making Swinging Safari and indeed all of his films, but also some of the challenges that are part of that filmmaking process. And in today's age, can you make these films? Well, you know, it is controversial.
Well, that's it. He's talking about the casting of 200 blonde-haired, blue-eyed people on a beach. I mean, anyone would walk out there thinking you're making the Children of the Corn. that was the cast of that film. But again, we are looking at a period of time of our history. This is a period comedy.
It's a period piece.
It's a period piece. If you set it in contemporary now, then you can't take the piss out of it the same way as we are. And that's the thing. He is taking the piss out of a period of time that he's kind of almost saying it was a bit shit. This time was a bit shit, and this is how we behaved in that time. And,
He toes the line.
Yeah. But, you know, I know what it's like being the only Greek family in the eastern suburbs where a sibling has blonde hair, blue eyes, and still is criticised and bullied because they've got a Greek name. I lived that. So if I was to go back and tell that story, would I be, you know, would that be racist? No, he's just spotlighting a period of time that did exist. We can't just
brush it away
and just forget about it, you know, just ignoring it. We're only, I like that he's doing this. And he's going to upset people.
I would say that we are in a political climate where making films like this that do take us back to these uncomfortable times in our past is actually really hard to do.
But I think it's equally important because it's really easy to ignore those really icky parts of our history.
And that taps into a broader theme, doesn't it? The importance of Australian cinema, really.
Look, I know we're going to be covering this in the coming weeks with the conference, but one of the questions that was actually raised during the conference,
this was a panel discussion on the importance of queer Australian cinema.
And too often we hear people saying, Australian cinema, it's no good. And people really tut-tut our cinema.
Yeah.
And one of the questions asked
but
of the audience.
Enough, it's Australians that tut-tut Australian cinema. I think it's got an okay reputation abroad.
Well, I think it's got a great reputation abroad. How we look at our own
cinema is really
embarrassing. Now, one of the guests actually asked, how many people in the audience,
CEO of Screen Australia.
So Graham actually asked, how many people have recently seen Australian films? And I think most of the audience kind of embarrassingly
hadn't
seen
and that's
any
the
films.
Point, isn't it? How can we have a thriving film industry, let alone a thriving Australian queer film industry.
But it's also, we need to remember when we are seeing these films promoted, we are up against US and big budget films
that
have a marketing budget.
Well, what Graham said at the conference, which is really interesting, was that 90% of the Australian, and we'll cover this next week, but 90% of the Australian box office is dominated by the big seven Hollywood studios.
Of course.
And then you have 10% of the Australian film box office competing for that final spot. And that's not just Australian cinema, that's UK cinema, it's foreign cinema from all corners of the world competing with our own homegrown cinema.
And we cannot compete on the budget scale of marketing. I don't think people realise how big and broad the marketing of these big Hollywood blockbusters are. And everyone walks out going, oh, I'd hated that, but
it's
they'll go and see another
it's
film.
It's so ubiquitous that we don't even see it.
But it's so important that we support Australian cinema, and you know, you're allowed to go and not like a film because you don't like a lot of Hollywood films.
Gina, that sounds to me like a call out to go and see Swinging Safari.
Yes.
Is it?
Cool. Yeah, of course. Look, our audience love Kylie, so I assume they will be going
There's a lot that I think queer audiences will appreciate about this film. This is a camp farce. There is something very queer about this film, and that's what we speak about with Stefan right after this. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening is part of a series of episodes spotlighting iconic queer Australian cinema. We are chatting with Stefan Elliott, the director of, well, many important Australian films, including Priscilla, the new film Swinging Safari, but also films like Welcome to Whoop Whoop and A Few Good Men.
And you had the pleasure of sitting down with Stefan Elliott to ask more about this film, and hopefully do we get to hear more about Kylie.
I want to pick up, though, on this character's journey. Are we calling it Little You? Is this you at age 14?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's pretty absolutely on the nail. And my next-door neighbour, who's Melly in the film, yeah, that's 100% real, too. And I'm not going to talk about who, but people can do the mathematics and work out who it is. Do the homework and you might be able to work out who it is. You know, it's absolutely true. It's us as kids. We're still together. Inseparable, fighting like cat and dog.
This is not a Kylie reference, is it?
No.
No, I'm going in the wrong direction there.
No. There's only a few people who've worked for me from day one. You go back and do the maths.
It's not like Lizzie Gardner or...
Might be. You never know. Go back and do the maths and see who's worked on all my films from day one and you'll find Melly.
Wow. Okay.
The kids in this are very, very real, yeah. And the parents' past there are they're a compilation. I mean, there were real parts of my real parents in there, but I stopped. There was so much going on. I had a Super 8 camera at that age. I filmed some stuff from other families that was just fantastic. Those parents became those collages.
I want to come back in a moment to the themes around filmmaking, which I think were really interesting, and I want to explore in a moment. But in terms of this finding oneself journey that you were describing that Jeff goes on in this film, I think that's going to resonate a lot with a lot of our listeners and with queer audiences or LGBT audiences. I think there's something there that we can all relate to because we all go on that struggle in what feels like a very isolated journey when it feels like everyone around us is very different to us, all looking to discover who we are and find our true selves. And this film does explore what it's like to go on that journey.
True.
How would you feel about me calling it a queer-themed film, even though you are showing us this heterosexual white Australia?
It took a blogger in Denver when I was doing Easy Virtue to point out to me, he said, what's the running theme you've got in every film? I said, what is it? He said, there's a central character who's completely fish out of water. Every film has one. And it didn't dawn on me until that moment. And I said, well, you know, Easy Virtue. And he said, well, Larissa in Easy Virtue, if you've seen the film, it's Jessica Biel plays this beautiful American who comes to live in the big country house with Kristen Scott Thomas and Colin Firth. She's a complete outsider.
Yeah.
And it ends badly. But it was the realization that there's a little part of me as a filmmaker that's gone through every single film as a link of a person confused, not fitting in, not knowing where they go. And it was fascinating to have an outsider tell me that one. So I've done it again.
But also,
I mean, that's kind of cool to think, wow, obviously, so whether you like that or not, yeah, there's a queer through line through all of them. Is it queer, or is it basically, it's anyone?
It's the human. It's human experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all go on that journey regardless of our sexuality, but there is also something about the sensibility of this film. Character journeys to one side. This is a camp film. Like, this is...
Camp is a row of tents.
I'm sorry?
Camp is a row of tents.
Camp is a row...
My God, they're so young that it's the oldest gag in the book. It's been around since the 20s.
I've not heard that before, but... I think a number of your films are pretty camp.
They're pretty camp.
Do I
seem very camp to you?
I don't know that you can describe a person in the same way that you can describe a film.
You can call me camp. I'm interested in your attitude, in your answer. I mean, you look at me, do you see me as...
I wouldn't call people camp in the same way that I would call a film camp. I mean, because it's about so much. It's about the way you mix music and costume and performances and, yes, plot, but to a lesser extent. I mean, it's the feel of the film.
Sure,
it's
good
not,
answer.
It's not,
good
it's answer. Not the character.
Good answer. I'll go with that one. That's a really good answer.
Okay. I'd pass the test.
No, you didn't. That's a good one. I mean, I'm not camp. I mean, people are most horrified when they do meet me, and particularly when I'm directing. I'm a monster. But directors are. I mean, all I do is scream, shout, and throw chairs. And
I'm Gordon Ramsay of the
Oh, yeah, you have
world.
To. That's how you get things across the line for no money. Basically, you've got to break every rule in the book.
Yeah.
And I've now been told I'm one of the loudest people anyone's ever worked with now, because I will stop traffic with my own hand. I will go out there and stop airplanes if I have to. If the ADs are too frightened, I will walk out on a tarmac and put my hands in front of an A380, and I'm saying I'm not moving until the plane stops. And that is quite frightening when you see in action. But underneath that all, that monster that runs the machine, there, yeah, I guess there's a pretty camp person.
We are speaking with Stephen Elliott, the director of the new film Swinging Safari, but also the director of films like Welcome to Whoop Whoop and Priscilla Queen of the Desert. We're speaking about, I think, the very queer and camp sensibility
all about being camp, which Stephen put both hands up for that and then used a phrase that you had never heard of.
I hadn't heard that phrase before.
Okay, so camp is a row of tents. You really had never heard that before.
I hadn't.
And I've just, you know, dictionary that for you. And of course, I mean, it was a phrase that did come actually out of the 1970s. So well appropriate for Singing Safari, yeah. which film is set. It is a period comedy looking at the absolute absurdist part of the 70s. You know, when characters are wearing some pink one-piece jumpsuits, it is a camp film.
It's only a matter of years before that comes back. We are speaking with Stephen Elliott. More with Stephen coming up on Outtakes right after this.
Action!
Takes the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. And this is I Love the Nightlife, Alicia Bridges' 1994 hit, which I think is now as synonymous with Alicia Bridges as it is with Priscilla, Queen
there
of the Desert.
So many films that Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, you hear it and you think of that film. Absolutely.
Ah, it's a classic soundtrack, but a classic film.
It is.
And you know what I love? We were chatting about this before. It was going to be a Kylie soundtrack.
Well, he's got Kylie now.
Yeah.
In
well,
Swingin'
it took
Safari.
25 years.
Well, it did.
But of course, the studio that picked up the film was, I think they had ABBA on under their
Glory
label.
Gaynor to have I Will Survive as one of the songs that is part of your soundtrack.
It was a great soundtrack.
It's fabulous.
So we have been speaking this evening with the director of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and indeed the new film Swinging Safari, which opens later this week, about this new film, which kind of takes us back to 1970s Australia.
And we've received a message in because we're going to be spotlighting, you know, contemporary Australian cinema in the next coming weeks and queer Australian cinema. And a Joy listener has saw a really good Australian movie, The Dream Children, on a website platform I have not yet seen. Daniel, have you seen this?
No, I haven't heard. Well, we're not going to say it because we're not giving a plug to any particular streaming service. But no,
Children.
And that's the thing. There's a lot of really great queer Australian cinema, and I think when we do queer Australian cinema well, we do it really, really well.
Absolutely.
And one film that did it really well, I don't think anyone's going to deny this, is Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. It is a landmark, iconic film. We sat down with the director of Priscilla, Stefan Elliott, when we had a chat about Swinging Safari. But of course, naturally, as it was bound to, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert came up.
Okay, here's an interesting one. I just showed the film in China for the first time. I did a tour around and I loved it. It was one of weird moments in life where somebody said, the stage show is opening in Hong Kong. Would you like to come over? And then whilst you're there, would you mind going around China and visiting gay groups, which were just beginning to emerge in China? And I said, oh, God, do I have to watch the film again? And I thought, what an experience. Okay, I'll do it. And I had the most fantastic 4 weeks of my life. It was breathtaking to see this arising nation and these kids who have no voice. And the government's not shutting them down. They just come from a world of single-child policy, which is imagine if you've got one kid, that's all you can have, and the whole world's been thrown towards that kid, and the kids go, there's not going to be grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Those kids have been raised like that for generations, and they're terrified. But it was amazing to show them the film for the first time. And, you know, gobsmacked was the best way to describe it. But there's stuff in there. They've asked
me. And if a film is still gobsmacking audiences nearly 25 years later, you know you've done something right.
But here's one for you. I got attacked, and I did get attacked. One girl got stood up and went for my throat, gay girl, and she was really angry about Cynthia and the ping pong balls.
Okay.
Now, that has been around since the beginning. There was a thesis written when the film was released and it went out in North America that got printed. And that was the beginning of it.
Do you read that stuff?
That one I did because I was mauled. It became a thesis about, about treatment of women. It was absolutely right. And it's really interesting now. In China, a couple of weeks, this girl stood up and said, if you remade that film, would you include that scene? And it was really good in front of a big crowd. She said, I'm putting you on the spot. Would you? And I said, if I made the film now, probably not.
Okay.
But 25 years ago was 25 years ago. I'm not going to, and I can't apologize. That's where I was 25 years ago. So I said, don't force me to apologize. And I said, that was 25 years ago. If I made it now, no, it probably never would have happened. And that kind of shut everybody up. But at the same time, it's still there.
Sure.
It's appalling treatment of women. It absolutely is. But that is part of the edge. And I can't apologize for that.
No.
That was then. It's changed now. Famously, this is when the world has gone completely mad. Steven Spielberg redid 21 Years of E.T. He remastered it, re-put out. Great movie. I mean, it's kind of dated in age, but for a lot of people, that's an important movie of a generation. But you got the finale at the end there where you've got the police are chasing the kids and the kids go on their magical bikes and they all take off and fly. What are the police carrying in their hands when they're chasing those bicycles? Guns. What did Spielberg do on the 21st anniversary?
Really?
Removed all the guns and put walkie-talkies in their hands.
Did not know that.
He rewrote history because he was apologizing for guns and children. Do we have the right to do that? Isn't film a time capsule?
You would hope so.
Yeah.
I think you would hope.
And Kubrick tinkered to the end. Kubrick never stopped tinkering. He'd pull the films back and recut them and change things and recut them.
Well, and that's a good point. Like there is something to be said for art, like as a work of a work in progress.
But shouldn't film be a time capsule? Yes, and it also maybe not. It can go both ways.
Right.
But I do think that the joy of, look, we're doing Priscilla on stage. We've been doing that for 10 years.
Yeah.
Can I tell you what that's like to actually know the show can evolve nightly? And occasionally I'll think of a couple of new gags or some new ideas.
I imagine it's liberating.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And something goes a bit nutty and somebody misses mark and then everyone's improvising. I mean, it is live theatre. And it can evolve. But with movies, when I say the word cut, we got it. It's a time capsule.
I want to ask you then, because on the one hand, I imagine you've been talking about Priscilla for nearly 25 years now, probably longer.
Yep.
And sure, it must be exhausting. And on the other hand, you're still involved. You're still working on Priscilla, albeit on stage.
Yep.
And let's face it, you're bringing back together with, say, this film, people that you worked on 25 years ago with Priscilla, the production crew, and also
longer.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So, part of you must really cherish it.
Well, I call her the old bus and chain. She's been really good to me, and she's been fantastic. I mean, I went through a 10-year period of absolutely hating it.
Yeah,
hating it. I mean, it's just like, what do I have to do to get off this bus? And I was bitching one day
to... Interesting pun.
Yeah, there you go. What do I have to do to get off the bus? And I was bitching at some film festival somewhere, and I was bitching and just couldn't... Oh, my God, I can't get past it. And I was standing next to a kind of bald, fun, funky-looking guy, and he said, what are you bitching about? And I said, I just can't move on. Why won't people let me move on? He said, look, I wrote a show called The Rocky Horror Picture Show. And he said, I've never got past it. And he said, you know, look at it now and look at it. It's a gift. And that man's name was Richard O'Brien.
Wow.
And he says it took him 10 years and that he learned to love it. And he said, it's been paying the bills and it's been a good little friend ever since. So I had to take that, cross that bridge. And then I began to realize, well, now with the stage now, what we can do is keep it evolving so it's not locked.
Yep.
And that's been fantastic. For example, I'll just give you one little one. The end of Priscilla was, if you ask what Priscilla's about, Priscilla is about a middle-aged gay man coming out to his 8-year-old son. That is what the film's about. Everything else is smoke and mirrors and colour. It's all great. But that's the heart of the film. That's why it works. I saved that in the film to the last couple of minutes. What I did on the stage show was put it at the front. We saw it work, and it worked really well with the film. I said, why don't we try moving that? And that's really going to help a straight audience go on a journey rather than having to pay $100, $200 to walk into a theatre in New York.
Yeah.
They need that beat up front. So it was a calculated decision. We put it up front and it opened it to vast audiences. That's evolution.
Stephen Elliott there talking about the evolution of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And indeed, I think his full filmography really reflects an evolution of this look at Australian society that we got in Priscilla. And indeed, that is what Swinging Safari brings us. It is a farcical, politically incorrect romp through the 1970s. And it's definitely worth seeing if you like Elliott's brand of humour and political incorrectness.
And we need to be supporting Australian cinema, like it, love it, loathe it, doesn't matter. It's got an amazing cast. Opens this Thursday. Go and see it.
Well, we have run right out of time, Gina. We do need to thank Stephen Elliott for joining us on Outtakes. So thank you. Swinging Safari opens nationally later this week. Thank you, everyone, for messaging and for listening.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.